I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscowane. U.S. Airways and American Airlines are preparing to become the largest combined airline in the world now that a federal bankruptcy judge has approved their merger plan. This hour, we're looking at the impact of the mega merger on the industry in general and consumers in particular. In addition, the air traffic control towers slated for shutdown because of the sequester will start closing within the week. What does that mean for air travel, and is it possible to guarantee passenger safety while cutting services? Finally, how in the world do you cash in those frequent flyer miles anyway? It has not always been an easy process, but we've got an expert on standby to show us how to maximize our miles. We'll get to that a little later, but first, the merger and the impending tower shutdowns. Our guest is Henry Hardevelt, a travel industry analyst and strategist for Hudson Crossing LLC, a consulting company based in New York. Henry, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you.
So let's start off talking about the towers, because those shutdowns, I believe, are scheduled to start within the week. How are the airlines planning to work around those shutdowns?
Well, most of the airports that are being affected do not have airline service, and those that do have minimal numbers of airline operations. The FAA looked at this and said they set a threshold, I believe it was 150,000 takeoffs and landings a year or less as the cutoff line. There are 149 airports. Frontier Airlines is serving Trenton Airport in New Jersey with a few flights every day. They actually are serving two airports. They intend to continue operations. What's important to understand is, for everyone here, is that just as there are rules of the road for us as drivers of our cars, there are rules of the skies for pilots, and the FAA has very clear, strict guidelines on how pilots of both private and commercial flights must operate when they fly in and out of an airport that does not have a working control tower.
I know that there was a recent op-ed piece by Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. He co-wrote it, actually, with the administrator of the FAA, and that was the subject, was safety, that, listen, these closings might be difficult, there might be some delays as a result, but safety will not be compromised. Is there any reason at all for passengers to be concerned? I think the average person would hear that and say, well, how can you guarantee that? And, you know, when you're dealing with remote towers in some instances, or that one-in, one-out idea where, you know, the pilot lands and then radios that, okay, I'm down, somebody else's turn, that
right.
sort of thing. So can the public feel reasonably confident about this from a safety standpoint?
Absolutely. In the first place, pilots are trained very, very carefully. You do not just walk in, buy an airplane, and start to fly it. You know, to become a pilot, even a private pilot, requires lengthy education, ground courses, flight training with an instructor, and so on. Again, the pilots don't want to hurt themselves or anyone else, whether they are a private pilot, an executive pilot, or a commercial pilot. So they take safety standards, safety precautions very carefully. In addition, some airports may have controls on the ground that are simply automation that help pilots understand things such as weather conditions, aircraft that may be operating, and so on, so that it may, at least at some airports, provide pilots with some sense of who's on the ground, who's where. And, of course, pilots are constantly radioing to one another, whether they are landing or taking off or doing anything else.
One last question on that subject, Henry. You made me think about flight schools and the towers that are used in flight training. Would any of those be affected, and what does it mean for those who are training to become pilots?
That's a very good question. I'm not a flight instructor. Flight schools can, I believe, operate out of airports that are non-controlled. However, obviously, part of what the pilot needs to learn is air traffic radio instructions and procedures and protocol. Remember, just because the airport itself may not have a tower doesn't mean this person is flying without interaction with other air traffic controllers. However, absent specific information on the flight schools, I don't really think it would be appropriate for me to go beyond that.
Well, let's talk about the merger, because certainly that has been the big news of late from the airline industry. And let me invite our listeners to join us in this conversation. Perhaps you are a frequent flyer with one of these airlines, or you've just got questions about what it's all going to mean for you. The number is 888-477-9499, or WHYY. Henry, when will we start seeing the effects of this merger kick in?
Well, first, the merger itself has to close. So it has to receive the approval from various government authorities. And for American Airlines and U.S. Airways, it's not only the U.S. that has to approve it. They also have to receive approval from the European Competitive Commission, European Union Competitive Commission, and there may be some others elsewhere. I don't expect any strenuous objection to this. We have seen other large mergers take place, for example, Northwest Airlines and Delta, United Airlines and Continental, and Southwest Airlines and AirTran. So it would be wrong for government regulators to do anything to block U.S. Airways and American Airlines from combining. What they may say is, we would like to see them give up a few gates or a few landing and takeoff slots at a few airports. Once the merger closes, and they hope it will be sometime in the early fall, it would probably take at least 3 to 6 months for the first elements to start really becoming visible to us as the traveling public. They may be visual things like signs at the airports, and they will work to combine the locations of the two airlines at airports. They will work on everything from figuring out what brand of soda to fix serve on the airline, to what fuel to put in the wings of the plane, to how to run that frequent flyer program, which will remain called the Advantage program.
Well, and that raises several questions, Henry. Let's talk about the frequent flyer program, because people are always interested in that. And what does this mean for my miles? Am I going to lose them? Do we have any sense of how people's miles will be affected with this merger?
So the important thing is, and having worked for a number of airlines, and of course having been a passenger and gone through a number of these mergers as a member of various frequent flyer programs, your miles will be safe. So if you have accounts with both American Airlines and U.S. Airways, you will have your miles combined likely in your Advantage account. You will receive communications from the airline as they go forward in terms of how you go about combining the miles. If you are a U.S. Airways Dividend Miles member and you do not have an American account, I believe they will create an account for you automatically. But again, the important thing to know is your miles are safe. You will not lose any of them. Your status will be granted through the remaining time that you have it. If, for example, you have gold or silver or chairman status, they will grant that at least through 2014. The real challenge, of course, is getting the seats. You know, will you be able to find the seats to the destinations you want? The good news is, a combined American and U.S. Airways means more flights to more destinations. The challenge, of course, is there will now be 100 million total members in the Advantage program after they merge. And while not everybody competes for his flights on the same day, it certainly will be hard to get those seats.
And it's been difficult to begin with. In fact, a little later in the program, we'll be talking about how you redeem those miles, because accumulating them is one thing. Sometimes redeeming them can be a whole other matter. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But a couple of questions, Henry. I'm just thinking about hub cities. And you talked about, you know, possibilities of flights being cut back and that sort of thing. And here in Philadelphia, certainly we're a hub for U.S. Airways. Do you anticipate that some current hub cities would lose that status as a result of this merger?
No, I don't. The good thing about U.S. Airways and American Airlines combining is there's essentially no overlap of hubs and very little overlap of competitive nonstop flights. There are only 12 routes where the two airlines actually both fly nonstop. And the good thing for Philadelphia is I actually see this merger as potentially being beneficial. I think that Philadelphia will remain not only a hub, but I think that it could possibly grow if the economy remains strong, if the airport remains an effective airport for the airline to use. I think American would like to see its mini hub at Kennedy Airport up in New York really become focused to serve travelers who are flying in and out of the New York area locally, and they would then therefore funnel the people who may be connecting over New York now through the Philadelphia gateway.
And then there's the all-important question about fares. What do you anticipate will happen with fares as a result of the merger?
Well, you know, fuel is expensive. As the CEO of one airline I worked for said, airplanes are expensive and they have to be paid for. A typical jet plane costs $70 million or more. So airlines are going to be very careful about how they price, but they know that we are very price sensitive. They can watch even the change. If they change a fare by less than a dollar, they can determine if it is helping or harming sales. The airline industry is very competitive. I think that a lot depends on who is flying against American, and how what is the state of the economy, how expensive is fuel. So, for example, if JetBlue or Southwest become aggressive in Philadelphia or other markets and competes to Florida, fares will probably go down. If, however, you see competition decline, fares will likely go up, but the leisure fares probably will go up less than business fares.
Well, and it does raise that question. When you think about all the mergers we've seen, we're down to, what, four major airlines at this point, assuming that this one goes through. And isn't there then the danger that prices could either stay the same or go up, given that we're down to so few major airlines?
You know, I would say that the answer to that is no, because, again, you have four major airlines competing it out in an industry where there's very little loyalty. Our research shows only 3 in 10 travelers are loyal to any travel company, and with airlines matching one another on price and in many ways on product and granting frequent flyer status matches and so on, it's very easy for someone who's not happy with Airline 1 to call up Airline 2 and say, okay, I'll give you a chance to make me happy.
Yeah, and certainly with being able to book online and book for yourself, and we've got all these travel websites, it makes it much easier to shop around.
That is correct. So we now have more transparency and more insight as passengers into the airline industry and the fares than when I began working for the industry longer time ago than I really want to admit on a radio broadcast. What I would say is also we have very creative competition. So, for example, Frontier Airlines.
Henry, I'm going to stop you right there because we need to take a quick break.
But okay.
Please hold that thought for me. We're talking about the merger with the airlines, U.S. Airways and American Airlines, and what all of that is going to mean. We want to talk about what it will mean for the cultures of both airlines as well when Radio Times comes right back.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Rodgers and Hammerstein's classic South Pacific, April 10th through May 5th. This deeply felt drama remains as relevant today as it was in 1949, featuring timeless standards such as Some Enchanted Evening, I'm Gonna Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair, This Nearly Was Mine, and There Is Nothing Like a Dame. For tickets to South Pacific, 302-594-1100 or online at DelawareTheater.org.
This Week in This American Life, Andrea's head tingles, and I mean it literally tingles, when she hears the sound of typing, the flipping of pages, or people talking like this.
This is gentle whispering.
Now then, barely touch the canvas.
I'm going to share something personal.
Andrea always thought that she was the only one who felt these tingles. But was she? This week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Thomas Jefferson University School of Population Health supports WHYY and offers a fully accredited master's degree in public health. An open house will be held Tuesday, April 9th in the school's new offices on the 10th floor of 901 Walnut Street. Registration by phone 215-503-0174 or online at jefferson.edu/openhouse. The Jefferson School of Population Health, bringing health and healthcare together.
This is Radio Times on WHYY. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about some big news coming out of the airlines over the last week or so, particularly the planned merger between U.S. Airways and American Airlines, which will make them the largest combined airline in the world. We've been talking about what that means for passengers, and we're about to talk about what it will mean for the airlines and the industry. We've been talking with Henry Hardevelt, who is a travel industry analyst and a strategist at Hudson Crossing LLC. And let me just invite our listeners to join us in this conversation. If you are a frequent flyer, if you've got questions about what this merger might mean for you, the number is 888-477-9499. Henry, when we left off, we were talking about the increased transparency now that allows passengers to really shop around and not to necessarily be loyal to any one airline.
That is correct. So, for example, we've got travel agency websites, we have price searching shopping engines, and airlines, of course, have their own websites. So with a few clicks, we can find out not just the fare on one airline, but would it be cheaper for us to fly airline one to the destination and airline two back from the destination? We also have creative competition in this industry. Before the break, I was just starting to talk about Frontier Airlines. They recently opened nonstop flights out of Trenton Airport and have announced plans to expand that. Trenton isn't that far away from the Philadelphia airport or Philadelphia area. So there are ways for people to find new ways to fly and to stay within their budget.
Yeah, and certainly I think more and more people are looking at some of those regional airports as an alternative to some of the international ones, you know, just given the parking and security issues and all the other things that you have to go through in order to go through an international airport.
Correct. So if you're flying domestically, sometimes the smaller regional airports can be more efficient for you. But again, if you are flying a long haul, for example, over to Europe or to Asia, you'll still need to fly in and out of the larger airports such as Philadelphia International, Kennedy in New York, and so on.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about what this will mean for the airlines involved in terms of the different cultures. What can you tell us about how similar or different the cultures are at U.S. Airways and at American, and what some of the potential issues could be for the airlines?
Well, they are very, very different. I mean, having worked for a number of different airlines, I will say that airlines are really very tribal organizations. We think and talk a lot about brand. Airlines actually recognize the power of branding, and a big part of that was creating culture. U.S. Airways itself is, of course, the result of mergers of a number of different airlines, going back to Allegheny and Mohawk and PSA, Piedmont, and, of course, more recently, U.S. Airways and America West. And so they are very, very different. U.S. Airways is a scrappier organization, and they're a little less formal. American Airlines is a much larger company and more hierarchical. They'll have to figure out what the right culture is. You can't just wave a wand, and you can't just say, we're going to do things the way Airline X did them in terms of culture. One of the biggest challenges for Doug Parker and the executive team at U.S. Airways will be figuring out what the right cultural fit and what the right culture itself will need to be for the new American Airlines.
Well, you mentioned Doug Parker, who is the head of U.S. Airways and will be the head of the new airline. What can you tell us about his style of management and how he might function in that new role?
Well, Doug began his career working at American Airlines, so he comes back to American knowing at least some aspects of the airline as an insider. You know, Doug is very, very smart. He, I think, deserves a lot of credit, along with his colleagues, for keeping America West flying right after 9/11, and for growing America West and merging with U.S. Airways and turning it into a profitable business. I recognize that for some, U.S. Airways may not be seen as the poshest of airlines, but it does make money, and airlines are a business. I think that Doug is going to be a very fresh and refreshing CEO. I think that he will help sweep out some of the cobwebs that exist at American Airlines, but I think he will also be respectful of what really matters, running an airline on time. I think he knows he needs to improve on the customer service and customer experience, and I think he'll invest in the technology that makes sense that people want to have, like Wi-Fi on the planes, mobile applications, things like that.
As you have watched a number of these mergers take place, Henry, what are some of the pitfalls that airlines need to try to avoid as they bring this deal to completion?
Well, I have the scars of having worked for Continental Airlines when we merged with People Express back in 1987. That was, frankly, a merger that didn't go well because we didn't do the right planning, we didn't think through technology, and so on. Airlines are, it's more than just painting the airplane and merging the frequent flyer programs. The technology, especially these reservation systems, very, very complex. You have to figure out so many different things from minutia, again, such as what soda do you serve to, how do you load the cargo on the planes, to what safety procedures do you follow. And there's a lot of detail, and as the saying goes, the devil is in the detail. So I think that the good thing is, having gone through a merger that didn't go so well, the executives at U.S. Airways are only too keen to avoid that mistake. And having watched some other mergers, such as Delta and Northwest, that did go relatively smoothly, I think they know they need to at least be as good, if not better than that.
What about the employees of both of these airlines, Henry? What are we looking at in potential job loss here?
Well, you know, I think the good thing is job loss should be minimal, if anything. In fact, before the merger, American announced plans to hire a lot of flight attendants. I think that where there is overlap, it's more in the managerial and administrative levels. So from the frontline perspective, hopefully job losses will be minimal. The airlines don't really compete overlap as with shared hubs. That's important. If the economy remains strong and demand for air travel remains strong, hopefully they will keep all the people working, and if the airline is successful, they will hire more workers.
And what about for the industry as a whole, Henry? If this does indeed become the largest airline in the world, what does that mean for the other three major airlines? I mean, we talked a little bit about competition, but what's going on in their minds at this point as they prepare to see this happen?
You know, I don't think that the airlines really focus necessarily on being the largest. What airlines really want to make sure is that they are large enough to serve their key customers, importantly the business traveler, and that they are the right size where they can earn a profit, because obviously they're publicly held companies, and they want to earn returns for their stockholders as well as provide good jobs and stable careers for their employees. I don't think you see anybody out there saying, okay, I'm number three or four, how do I leapfrog to number one? What I think the CEOs would be saying is, I'd rather have the best business performance metrics, whether it's earnings per share or operational metrics like on-time performance. I think that's what really matters now.
Has anyone talked about what this will mean for instance, the Star Alliance programs, right, that U.S. Airways has been a member of, and you've got all these member airlines. Is there going to be some upheaval with that?
Not so much upheaval, but I'm glad you brought that up. The movement of U.S. Airways from Star to the One World Alliance, which American Airlines co-founded, will actually help level the playing field between the three alliances. Star is right now much larger than One World, and this will bring them much closer in alignment. From the standpoint of One World, obviously, the addition of U.S. Airways to American opens up more flights for partner airlines and frequent flyer redemption and so on.
A lot of interesting things. And one of the things that I observed just as I prepared to talk with you about this was that overall, this has been viewed as a good idea, this particular merger, that most everybody seemed to feel that this was a necessary and good thing, correct?
It was. U.S. Airways, again, had turned itself into a profitable airline, which is no easy feat. But the markets it dominated were much smaller than those of its key competitors. The Charlotte hub that U.S. Airways has is smaller than Atlanta that for Delta, Philadelphia, great gateway, but smaller than the New York Metro, and so on. So this actually will help U.S. Airways, and it provides benefit to American Airlines. It was more important for U.S. Airways to find a merger partner than it was for American.
Yeah. Is there reason to believe, and I know you touched on this very briefly, that as a result of this, we could see some positive changes for passengers, you know, meals, movies, Wi-Fi, that sort of thing?
Well, as I sit here in my home office with posters from airlines like American and TWA and others from the glory days of transportation, I have the sad duty to report that we will never see steak dinners in coach again. But the important thing is that if airlines are able to earn profits, and they have to earn a profit not by price gouging, but by providing value and service that we feel is good and that we're happy in terms of the on-time reliability, courtesy, professionalism, safety, reliability, these things, if they start to earn the profit, they will, I hope, reinvest some of that into making our experience better. U.S. Airways, for example, announced a plan to add Wi-Fi to all of its mainline planes that fly within the U.S. American is putting Wi-Fi and in-seat entertainment on all of its long-haul airplanes that go to Asia, South America, and Europe. American has an extra legroom section in coach. Hopefully, U.S. Airways will adopt that. So if we see things, if the industry is able to make money, this is good. What we won't like is if you want a better experience, you're definitely going to have to pay for it, whether it's priority boarding, extra legroom, meals in coach, things like that. We just have to understand that that is pretty much the way the airlines are going to go to market in this new era.
Yeah, it's the new normal for sure. You mentioned a couple of things that made me think of some of the trends that we're beginning to see in the airline industry, and I'd like to spend our last couple minutes talking about some of those. Baggage, for instance. I'm hearing now that there is an app that people can use to track their baggage in real time.
You know, nothing will surprise me when it comes to all of this. Airlines actually can track bags real time. And, for example, American even has a function. If you get flight alerts from American Airlines, it tells you what baggage claim your checked baggage will be delivered to. So as airlines invest in technology, they should be able to do more of this for us. They should let you know and at some point even pre-order and prepay for certain things that you would like to have on the airplane. So I think that we will see a lot more done through and with technology to make the journey better.
Yeah, so at least if your bags get lost, you'll know about it sooner this way. That's the good news, I suppose.
That is the good news. And hopefully what they will also say is, we're sorry we lost your bags. We've begun to fill out the paperwork and, you know, go to a kiosk or do this online and we'll take care of the rest so that you actually don't even have to stand in line to fill out paperwork at a baggage service office.
Henry, there's been some talk in recent weeks and months, for that matter, I'm sure you're aware of it, about this idea of making passengers pay by weight. Where are we with that, and do you see that realistically happening with the airlines anytime in the near future?
There is a little airline called Samoa Air that flies airplanes with, I think, fewer than 19 seats in the Pacific that charges people by weight. Good luck to them. We will not see that happen here in the U.S. We will not see that happen with any large airline. As anyone who's flown knows, there are fewer people working at ticket counters and at the gates. Airlines are not about to put a scale at the door to the airplane that passengers will have to stand on to see if they are subject to a weight surcharge.
Mm. Well, that's good news, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, because there certainly has been, you know, at least some talk about, you know, thinking through that idea. And, you know, in the end, because it is about weight so much, I would think particularly with the smaller flights like the one that you mentioned with Samoan Airlines, that becomes critical. Also, we've been seeing reports of flight attendants and others protesting the TSA's decision about carrying pocket knives, which will go into effect soon, presumably. Is there any chance of that decision being reversed at this point, or where are we with that?
Well, I think the TSA is trying to show that it is its own organization, that it is above politics, that it is above political pressure or social pressure. Again, having worked for airlines, I'm sympathetic to the what the crew is doing, I question the merit of the TSA's decision to let people bring pocket knives and things like that, even baseball bats and golf clubs on an airplane, because of the potential for harm. The TSA may say you can't kill somebody with it, but I just think we need to take steps to keep the cabins as safe as possible.
Yeah. And finally, Henry, as you look at the airline industry, and you've been involved in it for a long time, how would you characterize the industry at this point, particularly now that we're almost 12 years past 9/11? What have you seen, and how would you characterize the status of the industry at this point?
Well, I would say that it is poised to become a better industry in terms of its financial performance. It is acting more and more like a rational business as opposed to a good old boys club or a bunch of characters, if you will. I miss some of the color that we once had from some of these colorful CEOs, but I think that having a financially stable industry ultimately means for us as travelers more flight options, more reliable flights, safer flights, and hopefully a better customer experience.
And do you expect that the airlines will continue with a trend toward literally consolidation in cabins? In other words, you know, the seating availability, making sure that all the flights are totally full, and in some cases maybe a little more than full. Do you anticipate that trend continuing?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think that airlines can get away squeezing the legroom any more than they already do. On the plane, at least airlines like American and U.S. Airways, but I think that you will see airlines do everything they can to make sure that as many people as possible are on those planes, paying as much as they can possibly get, whether it's from the airfare or from other services that they may offer, such as priority boarding, airport lounge passes, or whatever else they may create. What I do worry about, though, is with the industry so heavily consolidated, is there room for entrepreneurism? I live in San Francisco, and this is a city full of entrepreneurs. We have a startup airline, Virgin America. They're not so new anymore, but, you know, is there room for entrepreneurs to come into this industry with fresh ideas? I think that's important to any industry, and I hope there will be some new startups that come to the industry over time with products and business plans that make sense.
Well, no doubt that's something that we'll be watching for in the coming months and years. Henry Hartevelt, thank you so much for being with us on Radio
My
Times.
Pleasure.
Henry's a travel industry analyst, and we're going to talk about those frequent flyer miles. You may have them, but how do you redeem them? Sometimes it's not so easy. We've got another travel expert on standby joining us from Brazil, no less, to tell us how to take advantage and maximize those miles when Radio Times comes right back.
For 19 years, the Philadelphia Invitational Furniture Show has brought together patrons and artisans. Once again, the show is downtown at the 23rd Street Armory on 23rd Street, just south of Market, and runs from Friday evening, April 5th, to Sunday the 7th. Featuring modern and traditional tables, chairs, beds, textiles, lighting, and tabletop items. PIFS supports WHYY. More info at philaifs.com. The Philadelphia Invitational Furniture Show. Art you can live with.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Are some liberals coming around to the NRA's position that enforcing gun laws might be the best way to control gun violence? Also, lessons from Sally Krawcheck, the woman who rose to the top of Wall Street twice and was fired twice. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Chester County Historical Society supports WHYY and presents the 31st Annual Chester County Antiques Show, Friday, April 5th through Sunday, April 7th at the Phelps School in Malvern, PA. More than 50 exhibitors feature 18th and 19th century American and continental furniture, rugs, paintings, glass, silver, jewelry, needlework, and other decorative arts. Presented by PICO. For details on tickets, show hours, and sponsorship opportunities, 610-692-4800 or chestercohistorical.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscow-Wayne. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about some big developments in the airline industry, the impending shutdown of 149 air traffic control towers because of the sequester, and the mega merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. No matter what airline you typically fly, though, redeeming those hard-earned frequent flyer miles can be a lot harder than it sounds. But that doesn't have to be the case. With the summer travel season not so far away now, we've got some insider information, if you will, on how to maximize your miles and get the most out of your trip. Brian Kelly is a travel expert who grew up in the Philadelphia area and earned elite status on U.S. Airways by his sophomore year in college. We want to find out about that. He worked on Wall Street for a number of years, racking up thousands of miles in travel, and then left Wall Street to focus full-time on his popular website, aptly named ThePointsGuy.com. Brian Kelly joins us from Brazil. Welcome, Brian.
Welcome. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. And so you are in Brazil. How was your trip?
You know, I actually just flew on the new American Airlines just launched a brand new 777 jet that they outfitted with a top-notch first class. So I actually had a 7-foot-long bed, so I'm actually well-rested, so hopefully I'll be coherent today.
Well, how great. So you've had a chance to experience this firsthand, and I have to believe you used some of your many, many points, huh?
I did. It was a $5,000 ticket, but I used 125,000 miles, and it was $2.50 out of pocket.
Oh, my. We're jealous. It sounds like you probably won't have to pay for another flight in your life with all the miles that you've accumulated over the years. But tell me, we're in awe of this. How were you able to achieve elite status with U.S. Air as a college kid?
You know, U.S. Air, you know, this was actually about 10 years ago, but, you know, they run lots of different promotions, and I had actually studied abroad in Madrid that summer, and of course I flew from, you know, I went to University of Pittsburgh, but I made my routing, so it was Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Manchester to Dublin, just to maximize the number of miles, and then to Madrid. So it's all about, you know, squeezing out as much as possible. I wouldn't do that nowadays because my time is valuable, but, you know, as a broke college student, I didn't mind adding in a couple extra legs to squeeze out some more miles.
Yeah, and it sure has paid off for you. So for most of us travelers who may not be going about it in that way, how can we maximize the miles that we've earned? What are some strategies that are effective?
I think the biggest tip nowadays is people think that you actually have to fly to get miles, but it's all, I actually think they should be renamed frequent spender programs. It's all about the credit cards. So, you know, as the airlines were all bankrupt or still are, they're receiving billions of dollars from the credit card companies. So the airlines sell miles to the credit card companies, and then the credit card companies use them to entice new cardholders. So the trick is, though, is paying off your bills in full every month. But if you're responsible with your credit, there's no reason you should be paying cash for your goods. You know, I see people at the grocery store all the time still paying with checks. And I'm like, if you just paid with the credit card, you would earn miles for that purchase. You pay the credit card off, and you're earning miles for stuff that you were going to buy anyway every day. And these credit card bonuses are extremely lucrative. So it may make sense to rethink the way that you spend every dollar every day.
Yeah. So is there ever a time when it doesn't make sense to use an airline credit card?
You know, if you carry balances, the APRs are much higher than some of the low APR, no balance transfer fee type cards. So you're not going to get rewards on those cards, but the money you save in interest is far more valuable than the miles that you get. But in general, no. I mean, if you're at Starbucks, don't use cash. You know, put it on a mileage earning credit card. Some of them even earn double, like the Chase Sapphire Preferred earns double points on all travel and dining includes Starbucks. So, you know, and the travel even includes taxis and public transportation. So if you think about all the money that you spend every month and align it to the best credit cards with the best bonuses, you know, you can be flying in first class in no time for a fraction of the price.
So does it make sense to buy miles? I know that those offers are out there, but does it really make sense to do that?
It depends on what you value. So U.S. Airways is actually known for selling miles. And pretty much every month they've got a different offer, 50% or up to 100%. In some of the best-case scenarios, what that boils down to is you're buying miles for the lowest I've seen is around 1.1 cents a mile. Now, U.S. Airways actually has a really good award chart. You know, people think that they're a terrible airline for redeeming miles because they never have any availability. And the key is that USAirways.com is broken. It only shows you maybe 5% of actual award seats. They're actually a member of the Star Alliance, which means they have 27 different airline partners around the world. But when you go online, it won't show you award availability for those airlines. So you have to call up to book those tickets. But, for example, it's only 90,000 miles round trip in business class to go from Philadelphia to Tokyo, for example. So buying miles at 1.1 cents a piece, that's like buying a business class ticket for about $1,100, which can be cheaper than buying coach.
Right.
So it's all about how you leverage those promotions and the type of tickets that you want to buy and redeem for. But it can make sense, but in general, when the airlines sell the miles for 3 cents, it's generally not worth it.
Right, and so then that means that if you're going online trying to arrange your trip, that's not necessarily the best way to do it if you really want to understand what's available from the other airlines that are out there.
Exactly, but there are tricks. So, you know, U.S. Airways right now is partners with United. United.com is an amazing website. They actually pull in almost all of the same partners. So what you can do is go to United.com and search for saver level awards. The saver, like the cheapest level awards, are those that are shared amongst all Star Alliance carriers. So you can piece together your award trip, write down the flights that have the saver availability, and then when you call into U.S. Airways, you can actually talk with the rep and feed them the exact flights that you want. And the chances of the rep being able to find them increase drastically once you've done your research.
Yeah, as long as you do your homework, you're in much better
position.
Exactly.
It takes a little bit of work, but it can save you thousands and thousands of dollars. And you can fly business or first, you know, for the same, if not cheaper, than economy.
Let me invite our listeners to join us in this conversation. Perhaps you are planning some summer travel. Perhaps you have some miles that you'd like to redeem and you're wondering how that whole process works. Whatever the case, the number is 888-477-9499. If you'd like to call in and talk with Brian Kelly, he is an expert on these kinds of things and he's got the frequent flyer miles to prove it. Brian, here's my question about credit cards. I remember having an airline credit card at one point, and my incentive was, of course, the miles. What I found out with this particular card was that even though I was accumulating miles, I was not moving up in status. So I had all these miles, but I was still boarding in zone 5 and, you know, not appreciating the perks or getting, you know, preferred seating and that sort of thing. Have you seen that? I don't know if airlines are still doing that, but that was a frustration for me and probably for other people that, you know, these points don't seem to get you where you want to go in terms of preferred travel sometimes.
Right. So the elite status, it's very lucrative. So you don't realize how valuable it is until you get it, and then you just absolutely can't lose it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even the lowest level elite status with, you know, Delta or U.S. Airways, you know, you can get, you know, upgrades to first class for free, better boarding, you know, being able to pick the exit row, best seats at the time of booking. But you're right, most credit card miles are just redeemable miles, so they're only good for award travel. However, once again, it's all about the credit cards, and the credit card companies nowadays know that consumers want those elite miles, but they're going to make you work to get them. Most of the airlines, with the exception of United, currently offer the ability to earn those elite miles. So, for example, on the American Airlines Executive Advantage card, it's $450 a year for the card, which is really steep, but it includes lounge access, which is $450 anyway. So if you were going to pay for lounge access, it might as well make sense just to get this card. But you have to spend $40,000 in a calendar year, but then they'll give you 10,000 of those elite qualifying miles, which will almost get you halfway to the first level elite status. So, you know, if you're close to elite status and need that bump, but you don't want to get on a flight just to take a mileage run, is what we call it, you know, just to accrue the elite miles, the credit cards can definitely, you know, help you get to that next level and enjoy those extra perks, but it's going to cost you in one way or another.
No doubt, and that was my problem, Brian. I had elite status at one point and lost it, and so I had gotten spoiled, and it's just like you said, you can't go back. It's very difficult.
You can't go back, yeah.
What about when you do redeem these miles? Certainly this has been my experience, and no doubt some of our listeners can relate to this as well, that, you know, you want to fly Philly to Chicago, but you have to connect through Seattle or something crazy. Is it still difficult to get direct flights doing that? And obviously, I would guess the more miles you have, the better. But that's always been a complaint of passengers, that it's not necessarily a smooth way to do it.
You know, you still need to be flexible. You know, on the most peak dates and the prime time flights, you know, the airlines, you know, they're in business to sell tickets. So you sometimes do have to, you know, book a connecting flight. But the trick is, once you book a ticket, you can actually make changes down the line. American and United will actually let you change your routing for free. So as long as your origin and destination remain the same. So if the nonstop opens up, you just have to call them and say, hey, look, I'm connecting right now. Can you put me on the nonstop? So instead of checking every single day, you know, and wasting your time, there's this website called expertflyer.com. And what that allows you to do is set alerts that say, hey, look, if the Philadelphia to Chicago nonstop flight opens up, you know, a saver level award seat, it will instantly send you an email. So you don't have to waste your time checking every day. And then once you get that email, you can call up and change your flight. Now, U.S. Airways will charge a fee. Delta does charge fees. So that's why, you know, if you do make changes to award tickets a lot, you may want to align with, you know, American and United, who are much more fee-friendly on that front. But especially if you're trying to go to Australia, and they're only going to open up a couple award seats on that flight, to set those alerts and be the very first person to know when they become available is just one of the tips that I use to kind of stay ahead of the pack and get the very best award seats.
This is why we need the pointsguide.com, right? So that we can navigate through all of these different issues. Brian, we were talking earlier in the program about, of course, the impending merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. Do you have any sense of what that merger could mean for frequent flyer miles in terms of availability in particular?
Well, I think the thing to know with mergers is, you know, the two airlines are going to cut costs. And a part of that is probably going to be some routes being cut. Now, U.S. and American don't overlap a ton, so I don't expect there to be huge route cuts. But, you know, there's going to be the same amount of flyers on both airlines. They're probably going to trim routes and you know, trim the amount of overlapping flights. So, you know, less flights and less award seats and just the same amount of flyers could be problematic. There's going to be a lot of other changes, too. I think the biggest impact is for U.S. Airways flyers. So the new airline is going to be a part of the One World Alliance, which is what American is currently in. So One World is one of the smallest alliances. You know, they team up with British Airways and Cathay Pacific. But right now, with U.S. Airways miles, you can redeem on 27 different Star Alliance partners. Once the merger goes through, all of those U.S. Airways miles, you know, will become American Advantage miles, and you can only redeem on the One World partners. So, you know, for people who travel to London, this may be a good thing because you have British Airways as a partner, but British Airways also charges $700 in fees on many of their award tickets. So everything's going to be a give and take. They're going to be winners and losers, but the biggest thing is that the new airline will be One World, and you're going to have less choices when redeeming your miles. Now, hopefully the website will improve because right now U.S. Airways has one of the worst websites, and all signs point to them kind of taking the lead from American. You know, American's loyalty program, they were the first ever frequent flyer program. They've got a great team working there. So, you know, we could see positive changes like the ability to redeem for one-way awards. So right now, if you have U.S. Airways miles, you can only redeem for a round trip, which is very consumer unfriendly. So it's going to go back and forth, you know, big changes, I think, mostly for the U.S. Airways flyers.
Yeah. Is there any particular airline that you would say has the best frequent flyer program at this point, or who's doing it particularly well?
I don't fly United, but I find that United miles are the most valuable. Once again, they're a Star Alliance partner just like U.S. Airways, but they have very low fees. They have a great website that pulls up almost all of their partners. So with U.S. Airways, I do have a lot of U.S. miles, but you always have to call. You may get a cranky agent who doesn't feel like finding, you know, what you're looking for. With United, you can log on, instantly redeem tickets. They have pretty good availability, and they also allow you to do one-way awards. So I like United. You know, American's got a really good program as well. I think Delta kind of brings up the rear of the pack. They've really been hacking back the value of their program, and they're making some really interesting changes where they're actually going to, you know, to maintain elite status, you're going to have to spend certain thresholds, like $10,000 in spend to maintain the status, unless you have one of their Amex cards. So there's lots going on in the loyalty world, and it is becoming more and more complex. But at the end of the day, you know, most mileage currencies are valuable. So you know, it doesn't make sense to not get in on this game.
Yeah. So in our last few minutes, Brian, for those people who are planning summer vacations, that sort of thing, what advice do you have for them in terms of, you know, the best days or times to book travel, that sort of thing? What do we need to know as we plan for summer vacation?
So I actually just blogged today. I teamed up with Kayak, and they analyzed billions of searches and airfare prices. It does remain true that if you book, you know, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, a lot of times that is the cheapest because all the airlines are copycats. So if one airline like Southwest comes out with a fare sale, you know, the other airlines are gonna generally match that sale, and they usually come out on Mondays and Tuesdays. So by Tuesday, Wednesday, all the fares have been matched, and then they usually end on Thursdays. As far as award tickets, I would just say actually last-minute travel is a really great time to use miles. Airfares skyrocket as the airlines try to gouge business travelers and those people who really need to get somewhere. But all the if seats are unsold, the airlines at the same time are releasing a ton of last-minute award availability. So never think that just because it's last-minute, there's no way there's going to be award tickets. In fact, it's the opposite effect. So you can save even more money by using your miles. So I always encourage people, you know, take a vacation on a whim, especially if you're getting your flight pretty much for free. You can then splurge a little bit more on hotel or activities.
Absolutely. It sounds like a little flexibility can go a long way and potentially save
exactly.
you a lot of money. So, Brian Kelly, thank you so much for spending some time with us on Radio Times. Brian is the founder of ThePointsGuy.com. It is all things travel, airline in particular. Brian, we appreciate you being with us.
Great to be here. Safe travels.
Thank you. Same to you. Enjoy Brazil. You've been listening to Radio Times on WHYY. Our producers have been Patty McMahon, Debbie Bilder, and Susan Greenbaum. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. And tomorrow on Radio Times, we'll be talking about the 200-year history of the Latino community in Philadelphia. Beautiful new coffee table book, and we'll talk about that tomorrow on Radio Times. Up next on WHYY.